Opening words are from one of our illustrious forebears, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "Nothing good or great was ever done without enthusiasm."
I got an email from Fred reminding me that I'm part of this congregation and that I could do a reading today, and indicated one by Peter Berg. I was reminded when reading it, one of the real great epiphanies of hanging out with Avi during his early grasp of the language, and he said, "You don't have to tell me, I already know." Hipster. A tattoo with Chinese characters won't make you hip. Getting high won't make you hip. Chasing gallery openings and new bands won't make you hip. Or wearing a hat from the 40s. Ditto for piercings. Going to jail helps to make you hip. Being broke for a year, being left by a lover and losing your identity definitely show the way. And after that, if you can still be kind to anyone who did the same, you can finally get here.
So Peter wrote that for his daughter about 3 weeks before his death. So we can assume that this was the core of his message. Maybe everyone doesn't know Peter was the main founder of bioregionalism. He was a dazzling urbanite rather than a backwoods bumpkin. So the service today is in fact continuing the theme for the year of the generative community. And in something that's somewhat related, it's a poem that I wrote about the Occupy movement, which is another kind of community thing that's going on, and also where we are giving our loose collection. To the occupiers, whispers of the ancestors rise from silent earth to listening ears. Traces of sound, broken syllables, shards of memory, fall into dark and native ground, into the hearts of the people, and come together again like magical runes. Speak like singing, for talk is survival, and in the town squares of America they are talking now. Broken, torn tongues are speaking to each other, not to deaf and dumb giants who ravage the country, but to each other and to the land itself. Oh, magic words, rise up, words of care, words of love, words of wisdom and counsel, words that clear the air and mind, words of survival and continuance. Our strange and magical species wants to live on as the dreamtime returns. In the cooking pot together, or how to become a generative congregation. The creative power of the universe rises to meet us out of circumstances that seem objectively unpromising. We can trust that power against the odds. This present, actually existing situation breaks open like an egg. Evolution continues. Glowing coals in the fire, but one alone grows cold. If you take the tongs and remove a coal from the fire that burns in the fireplace and put it by itself on the hearth, and then wait a little while, you see that the glowing red dies down to a sort of a subdued red, and then it becomes sort of whitish. And if you leave it there long enough, it may turn black and completely cold, If you put it back in the fire, soon it will be burning again. So you see how the coals, in effect, are supporting each other. Each one of them has a reaction going on that it probably couldn't sustain alone, but when you bank them together, they all heat each other, resulting in the temperature being high enough so that the reaction can continue. Some years ago, there was an Ivy League university that had a rather small mathematics department. They had four professors, all fairly young, all men. And they became socially involved with each other and got to be quite good friends over time, the four men and their wives. And this went on for a while. When it happened that one of the wives had a serious mental breakdown, became profoundly depressed, and she was suicidal. Professional recommendation was that she should be hospitalized because of the danger that she would commit suicide, and that was the only way to make sure that she would be washed all the time. And, you know, this was probably in the 50s when going into a mental hospital might not have been a desirable thing to do. So the friends all met and they talked this over and they said, no way is she going in that big cold institution where many people never come out when they go in there. We are going to provide suicide watch 24/7. So they set up a schedule and they actually remained with her. One of the seven was with her round the clock for maybe 8 or 9 months before she started to come out of it, and it was determined eventually that she was no longer at risk, and they went back to a more normal schedule. After this, they became one of the most creative and imaginative mathematics departments in the country. So caring for each other has an unexpected yield. The congregation becomes more creative and lively, applying the story to ourselves. Both the frequency and the intensity of interactions among members of the group contribute to the capacity for imaginative action. Christ said, I am come to cast fire upon the earth. Not in heaven, on earth. Little known fact. That's one of the things they put way back in the appendix, so you don't ever hear about it until you're old enough to realize that it was, nobody understands what it was about. So, in any case, on earth is where it's happening. If you could change the quality of interaction occurring even in a small group, you could introduce a creative process which could spread spontaneously and potentially revolutionize the larger society. The congregation is the sacred vessel in which alchemical transformation can occur. Experiencing care and caring for each other is only part of this. Experiencing democracy within the workings of the congregation is also a source of radical awakening of our own spirit powers and experiencing justice. Many of us did not experience justice in our families of origin or in school or in the workplace later on. Hard to believe that it actually exists anywhere. Justice begins at home. The second principle up here of our seven principles affirms justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Fairness and openness require us as a congregation to deal with difficult and painful issues whenever they arise in the ordinary course of our life and business. Such justice can be achieved in no other way but through the democratic process. Establishing justice in the congregation is a work of world renewal and healing. My argument is that if there's a living fabric and you change a little piece of that fabric, it's going to move out.
So it doesn't have to be catastrophic to be effective.
Doesn't have to be. It might feel catastrophic at the time. So, establishing justice, nothing could be more important. And if it's not happening here, where will it happen? since we're a group of people that affirm this as one of our basic principles. In the bioregional garden out here, the gardeners work together rather than apart. We see the garden as an opportunity to develop connections with each other, as well as a chance to learn new skills and to get food as individuals. Most of the community gardens have individual plots, just like having your own little house with a little fence around it and, you know, that thing. So, dominant social arrangements are designed to prevent attachments and networks from developing. Online sales, automatic checkouts, private transport, getting all the things we need from huge impersonal syndicates block or kill a connection. Now, we here in the Unitarian Universalist Society are trying to move against the stream of a deadening and isolating individualism designed to deny us all satisfaction in living apart from that derived from products and to turn us all into commodities ourselves. The congregation under the big tent of the seven principles is a structure of responsibility. Within this structure, we may become responsible to and for each other, that is, able to respond to each other. We may become responsible for the continuance of this congregation and the capital accumulation, both social capital and money capital, from the past of which we are the stewards. There's no one else to do it. We are it. We could become responsible to it for our locale, both the human community and also the larger community of life of which humans are a part. And we can become responsible, able to respond to the call of being, to the dark and living ground from which we spring, the unfathomable depths. In our time, public space is being privatized, leaving us fewer and fewer places to exercise the right of peaceable assembly. Some years ago in Vegas, they privatized the Strip. They sold the Strip. Now, I've never been there, so this doesn't mean a lot to me, but this is kind of a big deal. They drew a line right down the middle of the street, and one side of the street they sold to the businesses there, one side they sold to the other businesses, including the sidewalk. So if you go out there and hand out leaflets, they just call the police and say, somebody's committing a nuisance on my property. And that's the end of that. They have removed a space that was formerly public property where they really couldn't do anything about it legally if you wanted to, you know, create a bit of a fuss out there. Now, here in the congregation, we can open up a space of discourse where we can talk of those real things which are actively suppressed and denied by the powerful. We are keeping an alternative vision of society alive, a vision like that of Vanzetti, where man is no longer wolf to man. As we have no hierarch, no priest, no bishop, no official theologue, we must do this ourselves within the terms of the fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. This is a key aspect of how we can become generative. Becoming mature, we develop a need and desire to exercise this generative role, caring for the general welfare, keeping the tradition of human things alive, tending the fire. Some might be aware of Erik Erikson, the psychoanalyst, who developed a scheme of the seven stages of life. The last stage is called generativity. That means after you've been a householder, you've had a family, you've had a career, all these things, you then get interested in something else, which is the coming generations and how to care for that. And you gain satisfaction by doing that. This is the grandparents' role. But, of course, you can do it much younger. So what I'm saying is that generativity is something that's highly desirable to participate in. I think we tend to see doing the business of a congregation as an onerous chore that someone else can take care of, and we'll just take care of being inspired in the spiritual side. So I'm trying to run against that. Congregational politics is not a necessary evil. It is a privilege and an opportunity. We are called upon to build support for programs and initiatives that are dear to our hearts. There is no other way for us to move forward as a congregation. Someone may question, why do we need to move forward? Why not just rest in the truth we have received from our illustrious forebears? because times change. The world changes. New facets of truth are revealed in new circumstance. We must rise up and act afresh within the flux of events of our own day. My thesis is this: to engage in politics with a small p within the life of our small lay-led congregation is not a deviation from some ideal state of conflict-free sweetness and light. Far from it. It is the actual working out of a sacred obligation. I would even say that the business, the politics, the work of building support for projects and initiatives is a sacrament. Emmanuel, God here and now, working in the currents and countercurrents of temporal process. A God who exists elsewhere on a glorious throne, never dirtying his hands with the actual chaos and risk of living, does not interest me. God, the artist in time, unable to stop the flow of beautiful, disturbing, fresh productions, the flow of her own inner life, moves through the world of time and matter, the great mysteriousness, the Tao, the nameless splendor, not only in the grass, but also in the passions of living people, splendor in the dust, splendor in the dump. As we wrestle together with each other in mad love and war, something is given off. Something is born of this travail. Why go through the discomfort of the democratic process? Because what is realized here can be realized in no other way. What we have, as you use, is potentially intense and extraordinary. Ezra Pound said that a book should be like a ball of fire held in the hands. The congregation should be like a conflagration in the meeting house or on the street corner. To participate is to be changed. What we are engaging together in together is world construction. Fires of enthusiasm. All fired up for this intensely involving and satisfying adventure in communal artistry. In a world where experts and technocrats rule, we are being statisticalized and generalized right out of existence. Our role is to be passive spectators only, repeating the universal model that is the consumer. But against the rule of experts, the amateur saves us. This is the democratic faith. Congregationalism is the recipe for a practice that can liberate us from the straitjacket of used-up ideas and statistical norms. As members of the congregation, we discover the possibility of real action outside the consumerist mold. The Spirit falls on the whole church. All the membranes of the body are involved. Therefore, it is necessary for every person's voice to be heard. Raise up your voice in the circle that is gathered around the campfire, around the chalice, the living flame of unpredictable life, a creative ferment, gestation with all the discomforts of pregnancy followed by the throes of birth, taken and tossed about, screaming with joy and pain, broken open by a power too great for us to contain, the congregation as the eggshell broken open from within. Breathless with surprise, we discover that creation continues in secular time. We are not stuck with the status quo. Real action is possible. This is our circle of trust. Things happen in a circle of trust that cannot happen elsewhere. But there can be little trust when sleeping dogs lie in the corners. There can be little trust when we must tiptoe around landmines left behind by the wars of the past. There can be little trust if we tacitly believe that the truth is too potent for us to handle and will necessarily lead to a destructive explosion should we nudge it with an exploring finger. It is in the small face-to-face group that the energies of life come together in creative ferment and generativity. The Wiccans meet the neo-pagans in covens of 13 persons. Jesus plus the 12 disciples make 13 also. Something magical in the number 13. In any case, not a huge crowd. Power to change the world grows not out of the barrel of a gun, but out of the intimate life of small groups. working through our differences, blockages, spats, and rivalries. Sometimes a man and a woman rub each other the wrong way. They find each other irritating, troubling, obnoxious even. Then all of a sudden, this rubbing starts to change. It starts to feel really good. Discontent and annoyance change into love and attachment. It's a mysterious process. The question for us is, will we hang in with each other? Will we commit to an open-ended process of change? Will we risk falling in love? Or will we say, no, really, I can't be bothered? Will we choose to stand safely on the banks? It's an illusion of safety. While the river with its tangled currents flows by? Do you want to get involved? Do you want to risk an involvement that could well change you too? So that you will look back and say, there was a time of turmoil and disturbance in my life when I began to be a different person. Our responsibility as members is to tend the fire. We are attracted to this small campfire in the night. We feel an energy, a life-giving warmth. Someone has been tending the fire. We don't know who. You can join the Holy Order of Fire Tenders. You can move toward a greater maturity by taking responsibility for the continuance and intensity of the fire. You can leave child status behind, no longer expecting some others to play the adult and parent role of keeping the fire going. The congregation is a structure of responsibility which offers a path toward maturity. Here we are encouraged to grow up into the fullness of the stature of our humanity. We are an offshoot of congregationalism. We believe that the congregation is where the action is. The workings of the ultimate active principle of reality take place preeminently within the container of the congregation. You will note here in this room a lack, a dearth of sacred furniture and utensils. Just the chalice, that is about all we require in the way of paraphernalia. Even the pulpit, especially important to Protestants, the sacred desk from which the word goes forth, exists here only in a symbolic way. And there is no sacred cup of Christ's blood. Why are these concrete symbols missing? Because the congregation itself is the sacred vessel. From each other's eyes and lips, we drink the white wine of truth, the red wine of love, and the encounters of our common life are for us congregational UUs sacramental. When you are grasping, embracing the bride, the picture of the bride which you carry in your wallet is not on your mind. The real thing surpasses and displaces the signs and symbols of reality. Don't look at the finger, look at the moon, says the Zen master. The church must be democratic since the Spirit is poured out on the whole church. We are the sacred vessel in which the Spirit dwells, the crucible of creative change. The fire burns here. It is our own common human reality which is the locale of profound workings. Ourselves or nothing, said the poet Carolyn Forché. Ourselves or nothing. Getting down, digging down, finding gold nuggets in the dirt, as the wandering Jew humbly bent down to pick up the precious jewel that others could not see lying in the debris on the side of the road. The sacred vessels of the past are shattered. What remains is ourselves, living on the earth, with eyes and hearts wide open and true to each other around the circle. For me, all this implies that when we struggle together often enough in discomfort and conflict to decide the details of everyday carnal existence, what color to paint the kitchen, how to overcome the clutter which has taken over parts of our building, whether the bioregional garden will be allowed to expand into a new area, righteous compensation for the custodian, what to do about the cat, the organ in the closet. That is to say, when we do our business together, we are in fact taking care of business in the most fundamental sense. The decision-making process is itself a spiritual process. It doesn't get any more real than this. These decisions are not secondary or purely instrumental, as the norms of a business society might lead us to think. They're at the core of who we are. And this is why we display here on the wall. We are committed to the democratic process and to justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. If from time to time certain individuals or factions, quotes, take over or appropriate space or time without full and open discussion or processing, then the congregation as a whole bears the responsibility to address the situation, not in the spirit of self-righteousness, but out of recognition that there's no one else to straighten things out around here. We can't call the bishop. Our forebears already decided that it's best not to have a bishop. And we here can't even pass the buck to a minister. We have no minister. We ourselves are the ministers. Unless we bear rule together with all that that implies, there will be no just and fostering governance. And unless we minister to each other, care for each other in a deep and searching way, no ministry will take place. When we got rid of priests, potentates, and cathedrals, we perhaps did not wholly realize what we were ordering up for ourselves. As we gather in our circle around the flaming chalice, the fundamental things of life come to light. Revelation continues. We believe that revelation is not sealed. We believe that it is possible for us to discern what are the fundamental things for our own time. We may be skeptics in regard to some of the claims religions have made, but we are not nihilists. We believe that the fundamental things can be known and can become a reliable basis for action in the world of our time. We do not defer to the experts of any kind. Our trust is in the fire of insight which burns among us. Together we can orient ourselves within a world of extreme and rapid change, disorienting change. We can find some ground to stand on. As the rules of the game in our larger society are changed in full view of the public, as fascism is imposed first on the level of laws and ordinances, and then in practice, as the United States government embraces detention without a hearing, abolishes habeas corpus and posse comitatus, plunging on into the quicksand of authoritarian rule, into which the individual may disappear, the individual may be disappeared without a trace, we are called to be different, expressing our values in our ordinary common life. Only by responding with our whole being to this situation may we affirm those fundamental things upon which we stand as members of this UU congregation. We'd like to get off the hook and go on with our distractions and secret despair. But when we gather together and look deeply into the campfire of our traditions, when we hear the old stories told again of those who refuse slavery and abject submission to unaccountable authority, we hear the call to be as great and courageous in our time as our illustrious forebears were in theirs. Here in the circle, we open ourselves to an unknown destiny. We follow a wandering God, unpredictable, even whimsical. Walking together, the road less traveled, we cannot anticipate what may be required of us by this seemingly innocent and harmless activity. The experts want us to think it's all over already. They have already made all the real decisions on our behalf. Our lives can be no more than mere repetition of prescribed patterns. What we do doesn't really matter. In the experience of living together in the congregation, we find out otherwise, if only we believe that the common reality in which we dwell is an open and living fabric of creative possibility. Maybe we should conclude extinguishing the chalice. Some words from Antonio Machado. Mankind owns four things that are no good at sea: rudder, anchor, oars, and the fear of going down.